Hey y'all, welcome back to Up the Coast with Alex and Britt. We are officially on episode 7 of our 2025 season for our podcast covering all things ACC softball. And Britt, we are a couple weeks now into conference play, trying to figure out what are we just now 2 weeks in for some teams, kind of some teams going on the cusp of like introing in to conference. But nonetheless, I feel like the ACC is sitting pretty right now.
Yeah, and I feel like we finally have a bit of a sample size now that we can kind of get an idea of what to expect moving forward. And with the new additions and the graduations, we've been waiting to see, hey, what are these teams capable of? I don't know if we have a clear picture, but it's definitely coming into focus now.
Yeah, for sure. And then just kind of like looking big picture too at the difference of conference play as opposed to like kind of that initial few weeks of season with all the tournaments and stuff. Like conference is so different because you're getting three game sets now against teams and really making those adjustments throughout the weekend and figuring out how can we beat the same team who we've scouted up and down inside and out. You know, how can we beat them three times in a row or how can we win a series depending on who your opponent is? And so I think that's really how the mindset changes now going into these weekends of play. And that's what's going to be so important down the road.
Yeah, I think the coaches are earning their paycheck now when you get into the ACC play, because we'll talk about it later, but these lineup cards and score sheets, they are long. There's a lot of substitutions, a lot of strategy going into it. And that's what you have to do when you're playing the same team three times. And it's a phrase I think gets overused, but the parity in softball, I think, is definitely there in the ACC. And we're seeing it with how the coaches are managing games, doing what they're paid to do. And they're definitely getting their money's worth now.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, we've got seven teams in the top 30 RPI this weekend, which again just talks about the strength of schedule that these teams are playing in and obviously the success that they're having. And we will break it down a little bit more. But before we do, a couple of ACC players of the week were named as well. We have co-players of the week for both pitching and all-around players. We have co-pitchers of the week with Emma Limley and Alyssa Houston. Any thoughts or feelings about that?
I will say that I think we jinxed this last week when we were, or at least I was complaining about not having a co-player of the week. And even though I hate co-player and pitcher of the week, I thought last week warranted one. So now we get two co-player and co-pitcher of the week this week, but both very deserving.
Definitely. And then the co-players of the week were Jason E. Beacham and Michelle Chatfield. So really good stuff and a good softball all around this past weekend. So some topics to cover today is who is proving to be the front runner in the ACC, who's going to be exceeding expectations, at least in our opinion, and then kind of who has us the most nervous. So let's get in first to who do we feel like might be the front runner on in conference play as a whole.
You know, in my opinion, I think right now it's between Virginia Tech and Florida State. I think Florida State definitely edges them out right now, just being more of a complete team. I don't think Virginia Tech is far behind, and I also don't think Virginia Tech gets the attention and notoriety that Florida State does. And I also think that's because of the schedule that Virginia Tech plays out of conference. I think Florida State really challenges themselves out of conference, you know, going down to Clearwater and then going out to Oregon, playing those games. And then they play Alabama on Wednesday. So they're playing a lot of big name teams and getting a lot of eyes on them and get a lot of attention. And Virginia Tech just not having that same test as Florida State. But Florida State, you know, I think every year we say it, that they continue to progress and develop and get better. And I think right now they're the clear number one.
Yeah, for me. I agree. I think Florida State as well. But I think Florida State's like kind of the sexy team just because of historics and how well they've done the last several years, things like that. Virginia Tech is really gritty in my opinion. And they're the team that, again, finally, I feel like is winning the games that they're supposed to, but also playing really good softball and playing some really great opponents and walking away with victories on those games too. So definitely excited to see those teams continue on through the next couple of weeks. It will be a big weekend for Florida State and we will get more into that with their opponents and stuff. But I'm excited to see kind of the head-to-head matchups that we keep seeing. Who do you think is exceeding expectations right now?
You know, it was to me going into this weekend, it was between Georgia Tech and Cal. just because of what they lost last year and their potential and what they could do. So they played each other this past weekend. So my answer depended on who won that series, and it was Cal. They won that series, and Cal's 22-5. And after losing Randy Rolling and to Georgia and transferring there, then graduating Haley Archer in the circle, they really needed their offense and somebody to step up in the circle. And we see them use like six arms in two games, but then they have 10 players with at least 40 at bats hitting over 300. So their offense has really stepped in, and just like we've seen with Stanford too. I mean, they're top five in the nation in batting average. So their offense is stepping up where that hole may have been in the circle. But I think Georgia Tech and Cal, to me, the expectation wasn't there because it was unknown. But for now, I think Cal is definitely exceeding the expectations for me.
Well, I'm going to stay West Coast. I was going to say Stanford. And I just feel like, again, the talk of the town had been Nidra Kennedy leaving and who was this team going to be? Obviously, two graduating some good talent, people transferring out, you know, the whole nine. But just has really not missed a beat, it seems like. Again, taking care of business the way that we feel like they should, having some pretty big marginal wins, and just the offense is rolling. And they're getting it done in the circle, too. So I think that's just a testament to strong leadership and strong veterans out there on the field. Getting the job done. So I feel like Stanford is exceeding my expectations, because I do think that people had counted them out a little bit given some of what they'd lost. I think it's just...
Yeah, and I think Alyssa Houston getting co-pitcher of the year is huge, because we've noted in past episodes her struggles with control and command, and her stepping up in a big way, and Kylie Chung in the circle too. So they're filling in a lot of question marks. And could you imagine their offense if Nyjah was there? Sometimes people just step up when they're needed, right?
But yeah, I think everything happens.
Doing a great job too.
Yeah, everything happens for a reason. And Houston getting the Player of the Week honors was pretty significant as well. Continuing to pack a punch. You know, it's like, hey, don't forget about us. We're still here. So good stuff. Dare we talk about the team that's kind of making us the most nervous right now?
Yeah, we can get into it. Do you want to get into it now? Let's do it. We'll just go ahead to, I think we both agree that it's Duke. I don't think there's any... anybody else would argue against it, just based on like the roller coaster they're going on right now. They went out to Mary Nutter and beat Nebraska and UCLA, and then come home and get swept against South Carolina. And then this past weekend, they drop one to Syracuse. And, you know, it's just like, as an outsider looking in, you're looking on paper, Cassidy Curd's back. The majority of their offense is back. They were in the World Series last year. You're expecting so much from this team. And I just find myself like, what is it? What the talent's there? What is it? And, you know, I just think, I was thinking earlier today, I'm like, so they lost Jayla, right? And then Kelly Torres behind the plate, and David's in the outfield. But it's not just the numbers they lost. I feel like those were like the emotional leaders on the field, right? Jayla was very animated. Kelly behind the plate, very animated. Like if you needed somebody to look to, they could look to those players. And I feel like they're missing the glue. There's some kind of glue missing from them.
Yeah, I agree. And just to tack on a little bit more about why they're making us nervous is, I think, like you said, on paper, we see their potential. And when you're looking at a team's potential and what they should be doing, I don't feel like they're taking care of business the way in which their numbers and their past, like history, has reflected that they should be. And again, not to say that they can't figure it out and that they won't figure it out. Of course, we hope that they do. But yeah, just kind of like teetering on that edge right now. So let's get into Florida State-Pittsburgh. Obviously played last weekend. Florida State swept the series, played in Tallahassee. I feel like we do agree that Florida State right now, for the first time, and I do feel like a while, just because it's hard to really put all the puzzle pieces together, is probably the most complete team that they've been in the last few seasons.
Yeah, I agree. I think last year they struggled mightily in the circle, and a lot of that is attributed to injuries and youth. But I think they have a complete staff that they can go to, and they use. They're pairing pitchers up with each other to give hitters different looks. They're hard to prepare for, and their offense, when it's on, it is electric from top to bottom. I thought the one thing that Florida State is lacking, I guess, is defensively. And I think you can see that how Coach is trying to combat that with her lineup card. I mean, in game one against Pitt, they had 17 players in the game. Game two, 14. Game three, 16. You had three different second basemen. You have a defensive specialist coming in at first base. Enfield switching off behind the plate. I mean, they're doing a lot on defense to try and make themselves a lot stronger there, which I think is going to pay off in the long run, because that may be their biggest weakness this year, is aside from the from that shortstop Torres, Issa Torres, she's a stud, and Beecham at third base. I think there's a couple holes there, but I think they're working, coach is working her magic like she does with the pitchers to kind of have a staff on defense as well.
Yeah, are you saying that 17 players and 14 players and 16 players isn't normal? Like, are you,
I would hate to keep that scorebook. I mean, their lineup card's got to be the extended version, right?
Colors everywhere. If you're like me and you're keeping like different like colors for substitutions, yeah, it just goes right out the window. But yeah, Florida State, I agree, doing a good job putting it together and just everybody kind of serving a role too, which I think is one of the things that, like you said, we've seen so much in the circle, but hadn't really seen it, you know, in different areas of the field. And I think it's happened in the past, like as a whole, like you have people coming in late in the games, of course, for defensive purposes and whatever else, but this is a legitimate, like, full team effort here. And whether it is like depth or whether it is just figuring it out, you know, that's obviously a story to be told by Florida State, but I'm here for it. I like watching it. And as long as they're winning, I don't think we can really critique it. We're just kind of curious, I think, more than anything. I did see a fun little stat earlier too, and we talk about FSU being a complete team and one of the best ones that we've seen from that program in several years. And they're one of three teams in the country to be ranked in the top 10 in both runs per game and earned run average. So again, doing it on the side of offense and doing it in the circle, taking care of the ball. So sitting top 10 in ERA and getting the job done there. And then again, putting up a lot of runs. I think they're averaging over 8 runs a game, and the ERA is, I think, just about 1.8 or so earned runs a game as well.
Well, I think if you're scoring more runs than you're giving up, that's a good recipe for success.
Yeah, that does breed some wins. But let's get into Virginia Tech at Louisville. Virginia Tech swept the series at Louisville. Do we say anything other than Emma Lemley?
I think we can, but let's talk about Emma Lemley right now. I mean, her fourth no-hitter of the year, and it could have been another perfect game. There was a questionable full count call in the bottom of the sixth or the top of the sixth inning where the umpire issued a walk. But aside from that, it was just 92 pitches. And I think that is the one thing that Emma Lemley has really elevated her game this year, is her efficiency and going at the corners and hitting the corners. I think last year, she gave up 53 walks and 120 innings pitched. This year, 18 walks and 82 innings pitched with 111 Ks. I mean, that's somebody that is going after the strike zone, that's not wasting any time and trusting their movement. I saw an interview she did after the game, after her no-hitter, that coming into that game, her inside rise ball wasn't working right. She wasn't placing out in the corner where she wanted to, so she really worked on that. And just seeing that focus of a pitcher knowing, I'm not wasting pitches, but I'm going to move it, but I'm also going to move it on the corner. And I think that's just really elevated her game and her confidence level. We know how much talent she has, but when she has that confidence, she's unhittable.
Yeah, absolutely. Love the pun. But I think my favorite words, other than like just the pure dominance that she has that you use with her, is efficiency, because I agree. And that's something I talk about a lot on broadcast when we're calling games, is a pitcher's efficiency in the circle, because how good can I be and how quickly can I be that great in a game? And I think that's really where we see these teams excelling. And for Emma Lemley, like doing some quick girl math here, girl softball math, like cutting her walks and free passes down by almost a half of the innings pitched, and the ratios there and stuff is everything. And so just a huge key to success. But of course, we can't just talk about her getting it done in the circle. We've got to acknowledge the offense and everything that they were able to do. They scored almost 30 runs across three games. They topped out at 27 runs, but of course, doing the Virginia Tech things, 10 home runs on the weekend, Britt.
Yeah, and Michelle Chatfield, the co-player of the year. Here I go, trying to speak it into existence.
Are you foreshadowing?
Player of the week. She hit 36. She had 4 home runs in 3 games with 7 RBIs. Corey McMillan, 3 home runs. Kylie Aldridge, 2 home runs. And Rachel Castine added a home run to herself. So, I mean, this is a team that's known for the long ball. Hit over 100 last season. They're going to swing it. I don't know if necessarily this year they live and die by it, which I appreciate, but when they're swinging it and they can, they're going to put up a lot of runs really quickly. And if you've got Emma Lemley in circle, that's it's a recipe for success. But they also have other pitchers too. Sophie Kleiman got the two-hit complete game in game one. Emma Limley, four-hit game complete game in game two. Then Emma Mazarone and Limley split game three. So it's just not the Emma Limley show, even though that she's getting a lot of attention. I don't think she would be as good without the depth they have in the circle.
Agree. It's just like hitting, right? You've got to surround yourself and protect yourself with good hitters so that your best hitter can get pitches to hit. Kind of same with your pitching staff. And when you can surround a team with good pitchers, there's only going to be good things to come. So good stuff. Love to see Virginia Tech having the success that they are. I think it's been a long time coming. So we're fired up. Syracuse at Duke. This was an interesting one, in my opinion. Some of the games were a little close, and it just caught me by surprise more than anything.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would go into the series and be like, all right, this is going to be an extra inning game, an upset, and then a close one.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, Syracuse history is usually bottom of the ACC, but we've seen them in the past couple years taking, a few years ago, they got the first ACC tournament win. They've, you know, finished, just even making it to the ACC tournament was an achievement for them. But I think Coach Stepien has really done a good job in the past couple years of elevating this program. But I want to give the flowers and the recognition to Madison Knight. I mean, she has been there and has gone through the grind and the struggle, and she has stayed true and loyal to this program, and she came out huge in their upset against Duke. She threw the complete game and then had the go-ahead home run in the top of the seventh. I mean, that's just a stellar, at Duke, stellar performance. She was just lights out. She had six strikeouts without issuing a walk, and sometimes you just need that performance, especially when a team like Duke is still trying to figure it out. Syracuse isn't afraid of anybody.
Mm-hmm. I think it's good stuff. And like you said, Coach Depking and what she's doing leadership wise, I think is really surrounding herself with some quality coaches, and they're continuing to elevate their game. And, you know, I've spoken before about Sonia O'Hara and what she's doing as well, but somebody that came from that Syracuse program and continuing to elevate it to new heights is super exciting. To push Duke, who is obviously sitting atop of the ACC, to extra innings, to give them kind of that scrappy back and forth, to push game three to the really close one as well. Like, you're doing some things right, because that doesn't just happen overnight. But let's talk a little bit now about Duke. And again, we talked about how well they've been playing and how, again, like on paper, they should be, again, just, you know, top tier, because they didn't lose outside of, to your point, obviously, ace pitcher, ace catcher, starting catcher, and then a really big bat as well with Claire Davidson. I mean, they're the same team though, right? In a lot of ways. And in some of their best ways, returning Amina Vega, returning Jada Baker in the infield. A lot of experience, and there's so much speed in the top of the order. There's speed in the bottom of the order. Like, they do a lot of things well. So what's going on?
They are. On paper, they're a great team. And it's like all these expectations coming into the season, especially after last year's postseason run where Cass Curd was the hero. You know, Jayla Wright would get the start, and then Cass Curd would come in, just shut them down, and they'd get that one hit, use their speed that they have. You know, to me, it just, we talked about it the other day, they just don't feel like they're all the way locked in. You know, there were some base running mistakes against Syracuse. I'm like, what? Are that, like, what's happening? Like, that's just a lack of focus, in my opinion. It's hard to pinpoint right now. And I think it really reminds me, this is Cass Curd's sophomore season, of Emma Limley's sophomore season when Keely Rochard graduated, and now she's the number one, and everybody's looking to her. It's like, what's wrong with Emma Limley? What's wrong with Cassie Curd? I don't think anything's wrong with them. I think that teams are just prepared. They don't have to prepare for anybody else right now, but Danny Drugmuller's been doing a good job picking up, getting some starts and, you know, some wins along the way, doing a great job there. But that extra pressure as just a sophomore, she's an underclassman, she's a sophomore. But the one thing that I don't expect to see from this team is mental mistakes on the base paths. Things like that just, you know, kind of point to something isn't keyed in. The focus just isn't right there. I don't know if it's because they were playing Syracuse this weekend, or they just get hyped up for the big games, or what it is. But they definitely, you said it earlier, Alex, they have the talent. They have all the keys they need for success. It's just, how are they going to focus it? And who's going to step up and be that emotional leader for this team?
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think my head also goes to like depth of a team too, because like, mm-hmm. I know as a player, when I wasn't performing like knowing that I was in the clear and like I didn't really have anybody to come in and take my spot, like I was definitely a little bit more comfortable. And I do feel like as a player, you get away with those silly mistakes sometimes a little bit more than you do if somebody's on your ass and you're like, hey, if you mess up, I'm coming for your spot. And it's that healthy level of competition. But like, that's really how you stay on your stuff, you know, like you're not making those mental mistakes. If you know that like at the drop of a hat, your spot can be taken. Not saying that is or isn't happening there. I'm just saying as a player, knowing that we have a lot of depth, like you stay on your stuff a little bit more.
You remember every play, every pitch is important if you want to be on that field.
Correct.
And I think that's true. The depth, I think depth may be a question mark too. That's a great point.
Yeah, what do they say? Like, I stay on my P's and Q's, like when, you know, like your tail's on fire a little bit. So maybe Duke players and teammates and people on the bench need to start setting people's tails on fire a little bit and fire somebody up because, I don't know, I don't want somebody taking my spot. So it's interesting. We'll see. But again, hoping and expecting.
And that can't come from the coaches, right? Like,
no,
the coaches can't fire you up as a team. They could give the best pregame speech, best post-game speech, the best practices, but that's got to come from inside your team. That's got to come from that one, that circle. Somebody's got to be there as a team, and you can't rely on your coaches to do that because they have a great coaching staff and they're getting everything they can from them. That's got to be an individual effort.
Period. So Clemson UNC, let's talk about your Tar Heels because I know you were on the cusp a little bit about like, okay, like, what are they capable of? How's the potential? Because out of conference schedule wasn't too difficult. So thinking that maybe we'd get a little bit more information after we started ACC play, but I don't think you're getting that quite yet.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I learned from UNC, and we just talked about it, is the depth. I think they are lacking depth offensively. Their offensive numbers as a team are astronomical because they're carried from the top half of the lineup. That top half of the lineup is lights out. But the problem is when the top half of the lineup gets on, there's not many people behind them to get in. Let me see my notes. The bottom half of the lineup had one hit in three games, and that one hit was a pinch hit home run. Sorry, they had two hits. One was a pinch hit home run, and then Reyna stayed in the game, was the DP the next game, and got the second hit. So that bottom half of the lineup in three games got two hits. And I think that's where we're starting to see, all right, can that bottom half of the lineup produce? And they couldn't this weekend against Clemson, but Clemson, you know, Basinger in the circle really kind of showing us that she's the number one. But, you know, UNC has the numbers and the talent to do it at the top half. It's just that depth right now that concerns me.
Yeah, and we both know very well that the best teams that go far have, even if it's not depth in the bench, always like you have 1 through 9 who are solid and can get the job done. Because when you start facing the best talent, they're going to be able to pick off the top 3 or 4 hitters and just not put them in situations to get on or get in the box with people on base. When you can kind of control that or at least like influence it heavily, like on the other side, it makes for a really long day when you're that team. You've got to be able to get it done 1 through 9. Hopefully 1 through like 12 if you're sitting pretty, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, that's the luxury.
It is, but it'll be interesting to see how that kind of continues to play out for UNC. But Clemson doing a really good job. Macy Cintron, man, she is hot right now. Like she's swinging a really hot bat. She's doing well. And I just feel like she's super clutch.
Yeah, and just a freshman coming up. 2 hits in every game this weekend. I mean, it's hard enough to have a multi-hit game, but to do it every game in a 3-game series where the coaches are watching film every night and making adjustments to you and just shows you her level of softball IQ to make those adjustments. It's like, okay, she got 2 hits on these pitches. We won't throw that again. The next game, she gets 2 hits on these pitches. Like she can hit them all. And for a young player to be able to do that, that's awesome. I think that name, Macy Cintron, it's going to continue to be brought up over the next 4 years and be a really big deal. But Reese Basinger in the circle, 2 complete games, 2 complete wins. That's great. And the names that we hear all the time, Alex Brown, Maddie Moore, Julia Noller, I mean, they're still staying hot. And I think that scrappy, fiery kind of, I don't know. Just that kind of rude team that you play against. Clemson's kind of rude this year, and they have to have that kind of mentality, and they've got it, and they took 2 of 3 from UNC this weekend. Big win for the Tigers.
I almost did say Clemson earlier with the team that is kind of surprising me the most. However, Clemson, it's hard to say that at the same time because like they didn't have as much success last year as I thought they would have given the team that they had and the people that graduated. But everybody can go through some rocky stuff. So I think Clemson though is rallying really well and keeping their name at the top of the ACC as a whole to sit kind of in that top five if I had to like dwindle it down. And I really like to see what the people there are doing. And again, a lot of it led by, of course, the performances in the circle, but then of course the top part of the lineup is really good for Clemson. And so just seeing kind of how they continue to evolve into a program, still building culture and stuff for themselves has been really fun and really interesting too. Georgia Tech at Cal. Cal took two in the series, so coming out on top. A couple like a big margin win, 10-2, but then the next game was close, 5-4. So I think that Georgia Tech playing Cal pretty tough was nice to see. This is a Georgia Tech team that again was really good last year and putting up some really big numbers.
Yeah, they got a taste of their own medicine in game two with the walk off. With what was it, five walk offs Georgia Tech has in the season, and Cal walking off there. And not to give any excuses to Georgia Tech, because I know that team and Amo or Coach Morales would not want any excuses, but I know they flew in late Thursday night, got in from Atlanta, Georgia to Berkeley, California late at night. They weren't able to practice on the field because of weather. The tarp was on there. You know, it's just this added factor that we're going to have to start dealing with, and teams are going to have to start dealing with the addition to Stanford and Cal coming into the ACC and those long trips. And then sometimes there's weather, and these players never been on this field. They, you know, just that first game is like getting to know. And unfortunately for Georgia Tech, the game doesn't care. The game doesn't care how long you flew, how late you were up, that you didn't get to take ground balls on that field or get a feel for it. But that's just a new element to the ACC this year and how college sports are in general. And, you know, does it help the home team out there or when Cal and Stanford come to the East Coast? I think certainly it does. But the game doesn't care. But Georgia Tech taking that last one and snapping Cal's 16-game winning streak, it probably was a much better feeling for them to come home. I know they're staying out there and playing St. Mary's, and I saw some pictures of them on the Golden Gate Bridge. So, you know, just experiences like that are pretty cool for an East Coast team and maybe some players that would never get to experience that either. So
Definitely.
I really was excited for that matchup, and it turned out to be a really good, entertaining weekend.
Yeah, like to see them, like you said, enjoying spring break and a little time because we know Georgia Tech and, well, even Cal, but just taking so much pride in their academics. But it's been cool to follow teams and kind of like their personalities throughout the season too, and how they evolve and the things that they get to do off the field. But yeah, I think the back and forth battle is, again, always fun to see. Georgia Tech, like, doesn't surprise me them coming out like that. And I have a couple kids like in the Central Florida area that like want to go to Georgia Tech really bad, and I was like, hey, like they just got another walk-off, like that's pretty crazy. And like keeping it interesting and just really preparing themselves for those more postseason like games. And I think that's the thing that Georgia Tech is going to have in their favor, is they're going to know how to win in the big moments because they've already been in a lot of pressure-filled moments like that. And that's not something that you really get to have, much less like in one season, let alone a whole career where it's like really coming down to the nitty-gritty like that. So I'm sure Coach Amo would like to have a little bit more of like comfort in leads and stuff going into the seventh inning, but nonetheless, she's making herself really tough. So shout out, Coach. But yeah, and then Cal, again, just like a team that does continue to impress me. I definitely think they sometimes get overshadowed by Stanford, just kind of when we categorize like West Coast as a whole, you know, and what it means to the ACC. But because Stanford has been so good the last few years, but I think what Cal is doing in particular is really special. And I'm excited to see them continue to find that identity through conference play and competing against some really good teams in the ACC.
Yeah, I think Cal, last note on them is they know who they are. There's no doubt about they come into onto the field, they're the bully. They're going to bully you. They're going to know in their hearts that they're better than whoever steps on the field. They have that confidence, and that can go a long way. So I'm excited to see them get further into ACC play, and I expect to see them on the top half of the rankings at the end in ACC.
Agree. One last thing for real this time about Cal, because I know you said one last thing too, but I think that a lot of that too is Coach Spencer. I just feel like she's somebody that's really comfortable in her skin and somebody that's like really like knows what she brings to the table. And I feel like she kind of exudes that kind of confidence to her players.
Yeah. As somebody that's played against her.
Right.
You don't want to play against her.
Right.
And that's how Cal is. I think they've kind of adopted that too. You don't want to play against them because they're going to be gritty. They're going to talk. They're going to do all the things to try and distract you. And they're also really good at it and they're good athletes. So yeah, I think they definitely are feeding off of the confidence, and she's a national champion. So why wouldn't you? So yeah, I think you're spot on.
That was good. That gave me a little chills. Notre Dame and NC State, two teams that I do feel like have kind of fallen back to the bottom of the conference just in regard to like look and what's going on and are they having the big games, and they're both staying pretty quiet. Again, this is an NC State, well, actually both programs getting new leadership. You know, it feels like Coach Leftwich is doing a really great job in year two now at NC State, trying to figure it out. Again, reprogramming an identity and culture for this program that lacked it for a while. And again, we're not going to get into what the players went through their time and stuff, but just it's hard. And I think it's going to take time. So I just think NC State is going through growing pains. I think that they're, you know, they've got some really good people in their lineup with the Ensley sisters, and, you know, they've got good talent out there, but they're just still finding their way. But Notre Dame as well, again, leadership change and just bringing in a whole new culture. Like, there's a lot going on in these two places. And I think that's hard to ignore every time we talk about them.
Yeah, I think if in this day and age, we're looking for somebody to come in and be a magic worker and just turn everything around in a year. And that's just not realistic if you want to build something sustainable. It's going to take some time. It's going to take a few years. I think both those fan bases need to be patient and trust the process, because it's not going to happen in 1 year, 2 years. 3 years, you'll probably see some growth. And if you want this thing to be sustainable over time, you know, you're going to have to cut the fat, right? You're going to have to put the people in that identify with your culture, have the same vision as you. And that's the key to success, is having different opinions, but the same vision. And that takes time to find. And I think both these programs, that's their goal. And we can't expect to see that overnight, but it was a good battle with NC State taking 2 out of 3 in that last game, going into 8 innings. So both those teams are going through some growing pains, like you said, but give it some time. Give it some time.
Yeah. Patience, right? Patience is a virtue. Boston College at Virginia. So Virginia sweeps Boston College. And I think this is big for a lot of reasons, because this is a Boston College team that we see have a lot of potential too. We talk about being led in the circle by Eden Bigham and just how great she's been, you know, but I do think that Virginia is just amazing. What Abby Dunning is doing in general, like, is just really incredible. And again, like, just, I feel like a complete team, and continues to get better and better.
You mentioned Eden Bigham, and she was the big name last year, really carried them in regionals at Tennessee against Miami of Ohio. This weekend, Savannah Henley, who's actually leading them in innings pitched, has really been kind of a focal point. Teams are not just preparing for Bigham. They've got Savannah Henley to prepare for, and she's dirty. She's got some really good stuff. And, you know, the fact that they had to win a game on a walk-off, for them to get that walk-off, was really important. I think every game matters. Taking 2 out of 3 and winning the series, yeah, you won a series, but did you leave anything on the table? I think that's where the good teams and the great teams separate themselves, is some teams, hey, we're happy we won the series, but the great teams, they want to take all three. And I think it's really important, if you want to separate yourself, that you have that hunger, that fight, and that expectation is to win a series is to sweep a series, even though, you know, people say you won it by winning 2 out of 3. So Virginia, hats off to you for gutting it out and get that extra inning win and sweeping the series, because you're going to need every game down the road.
Well, and how lucky are you if you're Coach Joe to have a 1-2 punch like Savannah Henley and Eden Bigham? Because it's like, oh, this day I'm not going to choose Bigham. I'm going to go with Henley. Like, and you're just comfortable. You're like, yeah, it doesn't really matter. You know, like, of course it matters, but just that level of comfort. And then for Boston College, Abby Dunning was somebody that was so competitive as well, and having all these great successes and bringing a team back to life that we feel like had been a little bit dull for a couple of seasons. And just a pitcher is really make or break, in my opinion. I'm not going to sit here and say that the pitching is my most favorite position ever, right? Because I'll say it till the day I die. I'm a hitter at heart, but everything starts with pitching. You don't have a chance to win if you don't have a legit arm in the circle. And that's three really legit arms across these teams. But for Virginia to get it done with Bingham, with Henley, with, again, it doesn't really matter who. They're playing such good softball right now. And I love what they're doing out there in Cavalier land. So really good stuff.
Yeah, and they've got the offense to back them up. Macy Eaton hitting a home run in each game, and they're scoring some runs too. And we're still hoping for Abby Dunning. Just threw a few innings this past weekend after throwing three last week at Cal. Still working back from that injury, and she is that spark for BC. So the sooner she can get 100%, the better for Boston College.
Yeah. They can get there. Stanford this weekend, they went 3-0. They beat Cal Baptist and Nevada a couple of times. Alyssa Houston was phenomenal. You mentioned earlier that she got the co-pitcher of the week honors and just how great she was. And I think the biggest note that, Britt, you made mention of is Stanford is 15 home.
And they're playing in a football stadium. So how cool is that?
Legit. Obviously you've seen those pictures and stuff. Like, so cool.
Well, I know that their upcoming series in a couple of weeks against Cal, they're trying to set the most attendance for a softball game at their football stadium. The record's held by, what is it, Devon Stadium now, at Oklahoma City Hall of Fame Stadium. But they have the seating capacity to break that record, and they're promoting that so against Cal. So anybody in Northern California, get out there, go to that series, go ahead and plan now. You've got your heads up.
Should we take a flight? Meet you there.
Don't tempt me. I need to look at the dates.
Okay. Well, we can talk about it.
All right.
Okay. I just got excited. More goosebumps, more chill bumps. Coming up this weekend. All right. You go first, and then I'll piggyback. Stanford, Notre Dame. Who do you got?
I'm going to go, even though they're playing at Notre Dame, Stanford flying cross country, I'm going to go sweep by Stanford.
Sweep by Stanford. All right, sweep is pretty bold. I'm going to go Stanford. I'm going to go 2-1, though.
Okay.
Get a little more safe. Yeah. Oof, I'm sorry, but Notre Dame is a hard place to play. I don't know about you, girl. Yeah, it's cold and it's a hard field. All right, Louisville at UNC. What do you got?
This is going to be an interesting matchup. I'm going to go UNC takes two.
Okay.
From Louisville at home.
That's what I got too.
All right. We agree.
Am I just playing it safe? Is that what I'm doing? I don't know.
That's fair. You're playing it smart. You're good.
All right. Okay. This one will be good. Florida State midweek at Bama and then on the road at Duke. First of all, holy hell. What a week.
You gotta love the scheduling. I'm gonna say they beat Bama at home. Mm-hmm. At Alabama, sorry. Alabama. I'm going to say, I'm going to say Florida State takes two of three at Duke. I am. So they're going to go 3-1 on the week.
Okay. I got the exact same, but I'm going to go a little more detail. I'm going to go Florida State Duke split the first two games. I'm going to go Florida State takes game three.
Okay. I think that's fair. Game two is always weird, and then game three is just like always a close one.
Yeah. Okay. Clemson at Syracuse.
I'm gonna say Clemson takes two of three. Okay. I think Madison Knight's gonna have a stellar performance in one of those games, and Clemson's not gonna find the answer for.
Yeah, I agree. I just think it's so hard to beat a team three times, and maybe that's just where I'm at. Like, sweeping is just few and far between, in my opinion. So I got the same. Clemson 2-1. Cal at Virginia. This one's getting me excited.
This is the one that I have starred because this is going to be very, very interesting. And I think the only reason I'm going to give Virginia the 2-1 advantage is because they're playing at home.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair. Why? Like, any particular reason as to why? Or do you just think comfort?
I think the travel for Cal, I think coming over to the East Coast, playing on a field they've never played before, where Virginia is comfortable and they're confident right now, even though Cal is playing lights out. and playing really good softball. I think that's going to be my crutch that I'm going to lean on, I guess. I'm going to go with the cross-country flight. It's going to hinder Cal in that first game. They may come back in that second game, but I think then Virginia is going to win at least 2 out of 3.
Okay, I got Virginia 2 out of 3 as well. And I'm just going to go back to the identity piece. Like, I think Cal's too scrappy. I think they're going to walk away, whether it's by kicking and scratching, with one win on the weekend. So I feel like I'm just like, oh, yeah, me too, on everything you're putting.
No, I won't be surprised if Cal does come away with three. Absolutely. With two, sorry. I don't think they'll sweep. I wouldn't be surprised if they came away with two, but I think I'm going to go. If I was betting on it, Virginia 2.
I do think, like, that one, that series, and, of course, like, the Florida State-Duke series, because I just think no matter what happens, like, no matter how Florida State's playing right now, if they're playing super well, no matter if Duke is or isn't, like, I just think that you rise to the occasion a little bit more with certain opponents, right? And I think that's what we're going to see in that series. And then, again, I think that Cal and Virginia are so evenly matched. They are. It really could go either way. NC State at Boston College.
Give me... I'm going to go BC taking 2.
Okay. I was going to go BC sweep for the first.
BC sweep.
That's all right. I'm gonna do. Yeah.
All right. All right. Well,
we'll see.
We will see.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And if Abby Dunning's back healthy, that's a pretty good bet, but we just don't know the injury report right now. So, yeah. We
need to see. Too loud. My dogs will go crazy. So I'm going to like not.
Well, good. That was a heck of a weekend last week in the ACC. We've got some really good matchups this weekend with Duke, Florida State. I mean, that and Cal and Virginia, I'll be locked into those for sure. But ACC is going to be a lot of fun again this week. Start to see that separation from the top and bottom. We're at that point.
Or is everybody going to be pretty even? God only knows, right? I guess we'll see.
Should we mention that we're going to have a special guest next week?
Yeah, you want to drop it a little bit, or?
Yeah, I'm not going to name names yet, but we do have a confirmed special guest next week. A coach in the ACC will be joining us and give us an inside look into their program and have a lot of fun doing it. So you won't want to miss that one. And also make sure you subscribe so you don't miss it.
Leave us all your good messages, details, comments, whatever you got, and tell us what you want to know. So thanks for listening, and until next time. Bye.
Bye.